Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Local news roundup. Man charged with assaulting wife. A 28-year-old woman detailed in an Ettrick County Sheriff's Office affidavit that her 27-year-old husband assaulted her at least twice a week between August of 2018 to July 23rd, which concluded with the man pointing a firearm at her head. Fabian Quiñones Aguilar, 27, was charged with continuous violence against family, a first-degree felony, and aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a first-degree felony. The complainant, identified as 28-year-old Alexandra Aguilar, stated her husband of 7 years began assaulting her sometime in August of 2018, and he assaulted her at least twice a week until July 23rd, the affidavit stated. Alexandra Aguilar reportedly detailed during the assaults that her husband would hit her in the stomach with a pole, smash her head against the ground, which caused bruising and swelling to her face, and choked her. On July 23rd, Alexandra Aguilar said they got into an argument over money when Fabian Aguilar became violent, the affidavit stated. Alexandra Aguilar stated her husband grabbed her, pushed her to the ground, and then held a black firearm to her head in front of their 6-year-old daughter. Alexandra Aguilar reportedly told deputies that her husband held the gun to her head, he applied pressure, and told her not to move. Due to the 6-year-old seeing the assault between Fabian Aguilar and Alexandra Aguilar, a forensic interview was conducted at Harmony Home with the girl, the affidavit stated. The girl reportedly detailed during the interview that her daddy, Fabian Aguilar, would hit her mom all the time and put a gun to her head. The child also detailed that her dad would yell all the time, and it made her scared. ECSO investigators attempted to contact Fabian Aguilar, but their attempts were unsuccessful, the affidavit stated. Fabian Aguilar was booked into the Ettrick County Law Enforcement Center on October 24th. He has two bonds totaling $110,000 and was still in custody as of Wednesday morning, jail records show. Man charged with indecency with a child. A 64-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly inappropriately touched a family member. Rayland Edward Gibson was charged with indecency with a child, a second-degree felony. The reported assault happened September 7th in the 2200 block of Richmond Street, an Odessa Police Department affidavit stated. A girl, identified by the pseudonym of B.S., reportedly made the outcry that she was inappropriately touched while lounging in the hot tub during a family gathering. Family members also reportedly saw Gibson inappropriately kissing a 5-year-old girl on the lips twice. As the child was trying to leave the hot tub, Gibson tugged on the girl's underwear, exposing the child's buttocks. B.S. was reportedly interviewed, and she stated that while in the hot tub, Gibson inappropriately touched her. The girl also stated she kicked Gibson twice in an attempt to get away. However, Gibson reportedly pulled her by her legs both times. Gibson was booked into the Ettrick County Law Enforcement Center on October 30th, jail records show. He had one bond totaling $50,000, and he posted bail on October 31st. OA News at OAOA.com. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, November 5th, 2020, local and state. Feast of Sharing goes mobile. OA News at OAOA.com. The West Texas Food Bank has announced a new partnership with AGB to distribute meals to the community as Feast of Sharing takes a new look for 2020. For years, the West Texas Food Bank has partnered with HEB in one way or another to make Feast of Sharing event a success, Executive Director Libby Campbell said in a news release. As with most things 2020, Feast of Sharing takes on a new look in order to serve the most West Texans in the safest way possible. With all eyes on the global pandemic, the decision was made to not host a community dinner as in the past. This year, HEB is donating more than 18,000 Meal Simple Meals to the West Texas Food Bank, which will be distributed through special holiday distributions from the West Texas Food Bank outreach team and partner agencies. A list of partner agencies and mobile distribution locations is available on the West Texas Food Bank website, wtxfoodbank.org/how-to-get-help. A celebration we look forward to each and every year, the HEB Feast of Sharing gives us the opportunity to give back and ring in the holidays with our neighbors, said Winnell Heron, Group Vice President of Public Affairs, Diversity, and Environmental Affairs. Thanks to our partnerships with deeply dedicated nonprofits, we're able to safely continue this tradition for families across Texas and Mexico. The first distribution of the Meal Simple Meals will be from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Saturday at the mobile distribution at the MCH Center for Primary Care, West University, 6030-6030 West University Boulevard in Odessa. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, November 5th, 2020. Opinion. Texas View. A swastika on city property was meant to scare us. The Point. Instead, it just needs to bring us closer together. There are few more frightening symbols of human evil than the swastika and its association with the violent legacy of Nazism and the Holocaust in World War II. The adoption of the swastika by white supremacists in this country is as plain a signal as there is of the moral bankruptcy and anti-Americanism of racists. The waves of revulsion that the Crooked Cross raises every time we see it are appropriate, whether it is scrawled in graffiti beneath an overpass or carefully painted, as it appears to have been on the old Reunion Arena parking garage in recent weeks. The swastika symbolizes a profound moral rot that must not be allowed to fester. We don't know who put it there, but the disgusting anti-Semitism marked elsewhere in the garage is an attack, not just on our Jewish friends and neighbors, but on all decent people and on every vulnerable and marginalized group. The American ideal is now and forever must be e pluribus unum, out of many, one. Our national struggle and our national pride should embrace all people, regardless of color or faith or orientation or ability. Each person is precious, and if it takes a symbol of hate to remind us of that today, then we will take the good from the bad. This is an essential human struggle to reject the forces outside of us and within us that would negate our fellow person. This righteous struggle is never-ending, and that requires the vigilance of good and courageous people to perpetually engage. We believe that, even as hate speech and hate symbols seem to be getting ever stronger purchase around us, the good and courageous people will be there to reject this sort of cowardly scribbling. What happened on that garage is contemptible, and we should loudly rebuke the message of the swastika. We should teach our children the tragic history of this symbol and the atrocities carried out under it. Our children, their children, and our children's children must understand the past beyond a timeline in a history class and embrace the fact that repelling racism and hatred is perpetual. All of us must share the important work of building a democracy where every voice and every face is treated with the natural dignity each of us deserves. Whoever did this deserves to be found and exposed. Hatred prefers to grow in darkness long before it shows its face in the light. Exposing hatred affirms the moral authority that binds us as a city, a state, and a nation. As for the city, this happened in a vacant lot that plainly needs a security review. Like idle hands, idle property rarely comes to any good, and that appears to be the case here. We understand why the city is sitting on the reunion site and hope it will get the right deal at the right time to bring it back into productive use. In the meantime, it can't be allowed to be so unattended that this sort of thing happens ever again. The Dallas Morning News. Zero accountability for cops who choked and beat an innocent man. On a sunny Friday afternoon in July 2014, James King, a 21-year-old college student, was walking to a summer job in Grand Rapids, Michigan, when he was accosted by two unshaven men wearing jeans and baseball caps who asked his name and grabbed his wallet. When King tried to flee, the men tackled him, choked him unconscious, and punched him in the face over and over again. The men, it turned out, were cops, and for 6 years, King has been trying to hold them accountable for their actions that day. Next Monday, the U.S. Supreme Court will consider whether he should get that chance. If not, police officers will have another legal trick they can use to violate people's constitutional rights with impunity. "Are you mugging me?" King asked before trying to get away. As he was being choked and beaten, he cried for help and asked bystanders to call the police, which several of them did. The assailants, FBI agent Douglas Brownback and Grand Rapids detective Todd Allen, were looking for a 26-year-old man named Aaron Davison, who allegedly had stolen liquor and empty soda cans from his former employer's apartment. They had a driver's license photo of Davison, which looked nothing like King. Brownback and Allen, who were members of a state-federal fugitive task force, nevertheless claimed that they reasonably believed King was Davison, based on the suspect's general description and the fact that King was in the same neighborhood where Davison had a habit of buying soda. They also said they identified themselves as police officers, which seems highly doubtful given King's reaction. "I thought they were trying to mug me," King told an officer who arrived in response to bystanders' 911 calls. Even at that point, he was asking whether the men were real police. Because a Grand Rapids officer ordered witnesses to delete their cell phone recordings of the beating, ostensibly for the safety of undercover officers, we have no video of the struggle, but the witness accounts suggest that Allen, who choked King and, after the panicked college student responded by biting his arm, hit him in the face and head as hard as I could, as fast as I could, and as many times as I could, was out of control. "They were pounding his head for no reason," a bystander says in a cell phone recording. "They're going to kill this man," a 911 caller said. King's first stop after this harrowing encounter was the hospital. His next stop was jail. He was charged with three felonies for assaulting Brownback and Allen, but a jury acquitted him. After a federal judge dismissed the lawsuit that King filed in response to the incident, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit last year ruled that he could pursue his constitutional claims against Brownback and Allen. It said a jury could reasonably conclude that the cops violated the Fourth Amendment by detaining King without reasonable suspicion, taking his wallet, preventing him from leaving, and using excessive force against a man who thought he was being mugged. In its appeal to the Supreme Court, the U.S. government argues that King should never get his day in court because part of his lawsuit claims against the United States under the Federal Tort Claims Act was dismissed for lack of jurisdiction. King's lawyers, joined by members of Congress, civil liberties groups, and several FTCA experts, argue that the government's reading of that statute contradicts its plain language and intent. According to the government, a law aimed at providing victims of official abuse with additional remedies leaves King worse off than he would have been if it had never been passed. He not only cannot use that statute, he has no recourse at all. These officers did something that was illegal and then charged me, King said. The system closed around them and helped them get away with that. There is zero accountability. Jacob Sullum. Sullum is a senior editor for Reason magazine and a syndicated columnist. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, November 5th, 2020. Obituaries and death notices. Obituaries. Jesus Ontiveros, Odessa. On Monday, November 2nd, 2020, Jesus Ontiveros, loving husband, father, grandpa, and friend, passed away at the age of 84. Jesus was born on June 16, 1936, in Alpine, Texas, to mom Flora and stepfather Julian Nunez. Jesus is preceded in death by his son Aiden, his parents Flora and Julian Nunez of Lovington, New Mexico, mother and father-in-law Julio and Anita Acosta of Monahans, son-in-law Steve Marischal, sister Ramona Hennington, brother Francisco Ontiveros, sister Cuca Lopez, all of Lovington, New Mexico, sister Alcaria Garcia of Farmington, New Mexico, brother Pablo Nunez of Hobbs, New Mexico. He is survived by his wife Maria, son Christopher Ontiveros, and daughter Carol Ontiveros Marischal of Odessa, four grandchildren, six great-grandchildren, along with many, many nieces, nephews, and cousins. Visitation will be held on Thursday, November 5th, 2020, at Harkey Funeral Home from 9:30 a.m. to 10:30 a.m., with a graveside to follow at 11 a.m. at Monahans Memorial Cemetery in Monahans, Texas. Norma Moreno Bullard, Odessa. Norma Moreno Bullard, 58, passed on from this life on Sunday, November 1st, 2020. She was born on July 3rd, 1962, in Odessa, Texas, to Thomas and Josefina Moreno. Survivors include her mother, Josefina Moreno, brothers Adam and Eddie Moreno, sisters Susie Lara and Carmen Santiago, her three sons, Dr. Gabriel Salinas Jr., Andy Salinas and wife Priscilla Salinas, Moses Salinas and wife Clarissa Salinas, daughter Cheyenne Salinas and husband Julian Aranda, and five grandchildren. She is preceded in death by her father, Thomas Moreno, three brothers, Tommy, Frank, and David Moreno, and sister Anna Maria Bernal. There will be a small service for immediate family members only. The family asks that, in lieu of flowers, please send memories, stories, and photos to Norma Moreno Tribute at gmail.com. Thomas Trey Holman Barron III, Fort Worth. Trey Thomas Barron III went home to glory on Sunday, November 1st, 2020, in Fort Worth, Texas. A celebration of life will be held at 1 p.m. Friday, November 6th, 2020, at Sunset Memorial Garden and Funeral Home in Odessa, Texas, with a live feed virtual attendance option at www.sunsetodessa.com. Pastor Tony Pitcox will be officiating. Trey was born in La Mesa, Texas, on February 19, 1962, to Tommy Barron II and Margie Mitchell Barron. Trey is preceded in death by his parents, grandparents Tom and Marguerite Barron, and Durwood and Hulda Mitchell. Trey is survived by his wife, Shannon Barron, son Tyler Barron, daughter Samantha Baron Davis, sister Becky Joel Souter, nieces Cassidy Souter and Amanda Lanier, and grandchildren. Donations in memory of Trey can be made to the American Transplant Foundation at www.americantransplantfoundation.org. The family of Trey wishes to extend our sincere thanks to the medical staff of Medical Center Hospital of Odessa and the staff of Baylor Scott & White All Saints Medical Center in Fort Worth. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Death Notices. Adam John Adamo, Lubbock. Adam John Adamo, 54, of Monahans, Texas, died Sunday, November 1st, 2020, in Lubbock, Texas. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Harkey Funeral Home of Monahans. Bess L. Underwood Barlau, Barlau, Lubbock. Bess L. Underwood Barlau, 77, of Lubbock, died Tuesday, October 27th, 2020, in Lubbock. Celebration of Life will be held at 1 p.m., November 7th, 2020, at Lake Ridge Chapel and Memorial Designers. Pastor Jeff Jenkins is officiating. Arrangements are by Lake Ridge Chapel and Memorial Designers of Lubbock. Randy Lee Gord, Odessa. Randy Lee Gord, G-O-U-A-R-D, 38, of Odessa, died Monday, November 2nd, 2020, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 3 p.m., November 6th, 2020, at Crossroads Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Pastor Sheldon Riley is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Charles Lee Henderson, Odessa. Charles Lee Henderson, 59, of Odessa, died Monday, November 2nd, 2020, in Odessa. Graveside service is scheduled for 1 p.m., Monday, November 9th, 2020, at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Roberta Rajin Lawrence, Odessa. Roberta Rajean Rajin Lawrence, 88, of Gardendale, Texas, died Monday, November 2nd, 2020, in Odessa, Texas. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Obiets of Midland. Jean Cons Miller, Odessa. Jean Cons, that's C-O-N-N-E-S, Miller, 83, of Odessa, died Sunday, November 1st, 2020, in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 2 p.m. Friday, November 6th, 2020, at Grandview Church of God. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, November 1st, 2020. Obituaries and death notices for Sunday, November 1st. John Robert Big John Washburn. John Robert Washburn passed away Thursday, October 22nd. He was born April 21st, 1934, in Wheeler County. Surviving him are his wife, Frances Washburn, son, Terrell Washburn, and wife, Faye, daughters, Tracy Washburn and Christy Williams, brothers Walter Washburn and wife Judy and Cecil Washburn and wife Melba, sisters Wanda Beauford and Merle Quisenberry and husband Bob, 11 grandchildren and 18 great-grandchildren. Preceding him in death are his parents, Cecil Otis Washburn and Bessie Pearl Darrow Washburn, brothers Bill and Roland Washburn, sister Grace Cooper, and his infant son, Johnny D. Washburn. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that donations be made to Westover Baptist Church Missions Fund, the Door of Hope Mission, or Jesus House. Memorial services will be held at Westover Baptist Church in Odessa, Saturday, November 7th at 1 p.m. Billy Marge Bates. Marge Bates passed away October 28th in Odessa. She was born March 6th, 1929, to Bob and Ida Blue of Gordon. She is preceded in death by all of her siblings. She was the youngest of 14 children, her parents, and her husband, Jim Bates. She had married Jim in 1949. She is survived by two sons, Audie Mac Bates of Odessa, and Ron and wife Kathy Bates of Addison, two grandsons, three great-grandchildren. Services will be held at 2 p.m. Monday, November 2nd at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home with Reverend David Wayant officiating. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. John Bowen. John Bowen passed away at home Sunday, October 25th, at the age of 79. He was born September 18th, 1941, in Stafford, Kansas, to Clarence Lloyd Bowen and June Bowen. He married Merlene Alexander in 1962, and then in 1996, J.W. married Jan Jordan. He is predeceased by his parents and a stepson, Timothy Jordan. John is survived by his wife, Jan, sons Kevin Bowen of Odessa, Kyle Bowen and wife Cindy of Valencia, Spain, Chris Bowen and wife Jolene of Odessa, sister Carol Gerritsen of Irving, stepson Steve Jordan and wife Donna of Breckenridge, daughter-in-law Beth Jordan of Fort Worth, seven grandchildren, five great-grandchildren, and a niece. A memorial service is planned for Saturday, November 14th at 10 a.m. at Asbury Methodist Church, University in Tanglewood in Odessa. Please make donations to Victory Ministries Outcry in the Barrio Halfway House, 2300 Canterbury Street in Austin, 78702. Services will be live streamed at AsburyUnitedMethodistChurch.org or Asbury United Methodist Facebook page. Willie Ruth Guster. Eastland. Willie Ruth Guster, 89, of Odessa, passed away October 26th. She was born October 21st, 1931, to Thomas and Maggie Young Kregler in Gilmer. She is preceded in death by her husband, Alan Guster, Jr. She is survived by two daughters, Kathy Guster and Gina Jordan, a son, Jerry Guster, Sr., and wife, Lucia, a niece, six grandchildren, and 15 great-grandchildren. Services will be held at 1 p.m. Thursday, November 5th at St. James MBC, and burial will be at Ector County Cemetery. Viewing will be from 4 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, November 4th at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. Paula Porras. Paulina Escobar Porras, 80, passed away Monday, October 26th in Odessa. Paula was born January 15th, 1940, in Melvin, to Fidela Gonzalez and Anastasio Escobar. She married Benito Mendoza Porras, Sr. in 1959 in Big Spring. Paula was preceded in death by her husband, Benito Mendoza Porras Sr., and a grandson. She is survived by her sister, Julia Cortez of Hobbs, New Mexico, her five children, Benito Mendoza Porras Jr. and wife Rosa, Sonia Mancha and husband Jose, Juan Diego Johnny Porras and wife Vivian, Dorothy Porras, Paul Javier Porras and wife Sorario, and a godson, Benny Aguilar, and wife Delia, and one nephew, as well as 11 grandchildren and 9 great-grandchildren. The Porras family will receive guests for a time of visitation Tuesday, November 3rd, from 5 to 9 p.m. at Odessa Funeral Home. Rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. An 11 a.m. Mass of Christian burial will be held Wednesday, November 4th at St. Mary's Catholic Church. You may express condolences with the family by visiting www.odessafuneralhome.com. Death notices. Maria Anchondo. Maria Anchondo, 49, died Tuesday, October 27th in Odessa. Services are pending with Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Cliff Buchanan. Cliff Buchanan, 79, of Odessa, died Thursday, October 1st. A celebration of life is scheduled for 11 a.m., November 7th, at Unitarian Universalist Church in Odessa. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Chester Ray Cleaver, Sr. Chester Ray Cleaver, Sr., 76, of Odessa, died Monday, October 26th. A graveside service is scheduled for 1 p.m. Wednesday, November 4th at Ector County Cemetery, Los Angeles section, with Pastor Charles Simpson officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematoria of Odessa. Henry Coleman, Jr. Henry Coleman, Jr., 76, died Tuesday, October 27th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Luis Ramon Leyva. Luis Ramon Leyva, 76, of Odessa, died Friday, October 30th. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Wednesday, November 4th at St. Anthony's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery, Odessa 2 section, with Father Tony Franco officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Elario Aladin Larry Lujan. Elario Aladin Larry Lujan, 70, died Friday, October 30th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Pete Mendoza. Pete Mendoza, 64, died Friday, October 30th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Laura Hinesley Poole. Laura Hinesley Poole, 76, of Odessa, died Sunday, October 18th. A memorial service is scheduled for 2 p.m. Saturday, November 7th at Crescent Park Baptist Church. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Ruben Mendez Torres. Ruben Mendez Torres, 55, died Tuesday, October 27th. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Monday, November 2nd, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Local Big Brothers Big Sisters Faces Shortage of Volunteers, by Caitlin Randall. Fewer residents are choosing to volunteer with Big Brothers Big Sisters of the Permian Basin during the coronavirus pandemic, leaving vulnerable children isolated as the program struggles to find them matches. Bigs and their littles couldn't meet at the beginning of the pandemic, in part because of the school shutdowns that prevented volunteers from being able to meet children at their schools, according to Executive Director Kay Kreitz. The nonprofit also chose to postpone at-home visits as they incorporated coronavirus protocols. We had to take a program that was based on socialization and find ways where they could still be in contact, but safely, Kreitz said. They restarted visits after requiring volunteers to wear masks and encouraging them to meet with their little brothers or sisters outside, but have received fewer inquiries from adults interested in participating. Most of those who sign up to volunteer do so during community engagement events, which have been canceled this year to help mitigate the spread of the virus, according to Kreitz. Without being able to recruit volunteers, they're left with fewer adults who are ready to be matched with little brothers or little sisters. Kreitz said they currently have 5 volunteers in the system ready for matches, compared to 21 in September of last year. She said there are also fewer children currently matched with volunteers, 69 at the end of September, compared with 76 at the same time last year. And in addition to fewer volunteers, there are fewer children signed up to participate in the program, largely because of parents' concerns about passing the virus to family members, according to Kreitz. She said there are 53 children in their system ready to be matched, compared with 95 in September of last year. Still, the disparity between 53 children awaiting matches and 5 volunteers ready to be matched is one Kreitz hopes to remedy. Big Brothers Big Sisters and 8 other local nonprofits are participating in a virtual mixer hosted by Midland Shared Spaces to spread awareness of their organizations and recruit volunteers. Kreitz said it's crucial to find matches for the children who are sometimes vulnerable to issues such as domestic violence and are under increased stress during the pandemic, just as adults are, because they're feeling worried and isolated. Adults, as we grow, we learn how to deal with stress, how to reduce stress, Kreitz said. But children haven't learned all these coping mechanisms, and so the stress builds, depression builds. We just need to let them get out and relieve that stress a little bit and have someone to talk to and realize that we will get through this. Get in the mix, virtual mixer for Big Brothers Big Sisters and 7 other nonprofits, including Midland Teen Court, Share, and Gifts of Hope, is planned for 7 p.m. November 10th. Registration includes a kit with ingredients to make fall-themed cocktails that can be picked up at Blue Door, which is leading 2 virtual cocktail mixology classes during the mixer. This article is entitled Food Truck Alley Has Space for More Food Trucks by J.C. Lewis. Midland gained another food truck hub with Food Truck Alley, which is dedicated to creating a family-friendly atmosphere, according to their Facebook group. The alley is located at 3818 West Wall Street and hosts more than 20 food trucks beginning at noon daily. Plans are to add tables and additional seating. Food trucks setting up at the alley include El Pulgarcito, The Barilla Man, El Chavo, El Indio de Michoacan, Mariscos El Chaca, Smoking and Baking, and more. A variety of food items can be found, including elote, nachos, tamales, Philly cheesecakes, birria tacos, tapatio ramen, asada fries, ribs, cheesecakes, and more from different food trucks. The Cochino Ramos food truck even makes flaming hot Cheeto tortillas. Food Truck Alley is hosting a blanket and coat drive for those in need, November 13th to 15th. Organizers are also looking for vendors who sell makeup, jewelry, and clothing. For more information, visit facebook.com/groups/327-357-852-275-9228. Now reopened. Thai House reopened for takeout on Thursday after closing during the pandemic. The restaurant will be open 11 a.m. to 2:45 p.m. and 5 p.m. to 8:45 p.m. Monday through Friday. Just announced. Miss Lynn's, which was once a bakery and then a pizzeria, has closed permanently. The restaurant posted on Facebook on October 20th that it was closing. The page has since been deleted. Café Dominique has closed until further notice after a reported case of coronavirus associated with the restaurant and the upswing of cases in the Midland area. The restaurant posted on Facebook that they would reopen when it is safe for customers and staff. This article is entitled Planned Parenthood Opens Health Center in Lubbock by David Crary, Associated Press. A vast swath of West Texas has been without an abortion clinic for more than 6 years. Planned Parenthood plans to change that with a health center it opened recently in Lubbock. It's a vivid example of how abortion rights groups are striving to preserve nationwide access to the procedure, even as a reconfigured Supreme Court, with the addition of conservative Justice Amy Coney Barrett, may be open to new restrictions. Planned Parenthood has made recent moves to serve more women in Missouri and Kentucky, and other groups are preparing to help women in other Republican-controlled states access abortion if bans are imposed. Abortion access in these states now faces its gravest ever threat, said Alexis McGill Johnson, Planned Parenthood's president. She said the new health center in Lubbock is an example of our commitment to our patients to meet them where they are. The clinic opened on October 23rd in a one-story building that had been a medical office and was renovated after Planned Parenthood purchased it. To avoid protests and boycotts that had beset some previous expansion efforts, Planned Parenthood kept details, including the clinic's location, secret until the opening was announced. Planned Parenthood says the health center will start providing abortions via surgery and medication sometime next year. Meanwhile, it is offering other services, including cancer screenings, birth control, and testing for sexually transmitted infections. Planned Parenthood closed its previous clinic in Lubbock, a city of 255,000 people, in 2013, after the Texas legislature slashed funding for family planning services and imposed tough restrictions on abortion clinics. That law led to the closure of more than half the state's 41 abortion clinics before the Supreme Court struck down key provisions in 2016. There were no clinics left providing abortion in a region of more than a million people stretching from Amarillo in the Texas Panhandle, south to Lubbock and the oil patch cities of Odessa and Midland. Women in Lubbock faced a 310-mile drive to the nearest abortion clinic in Fort Worth. Anti-abortion activists have been mobilizing to prevent the return of abortion services to Lubbock and are not giving up, even with the new clinics opening. Lubbock must not surrender to the abortion industry, said Kimberlyn Schwartz, a West Texas native who attended Texas Tech University in Lubbock and is now communications director for Texas Right to Life. Her organization has backed a petition drive trying to persuade the city council to pass an ordinance declaring Lubbock a sanctuary city for the unborn. Abortion opponents hope that that designation would lead to either enforcement efforts or to lawsuits seeking to block abortion services. Thus far, the city council has declined to adopt the ordinance, but activists say they have enough signatures to place it on the ballot in a local referendum. Texas is one of several red states where Planned Parenthood has sought to expand abortion access. Earlier this year, its health center in Louisville, Kentucky, began providing abortions after obtaining a license from the newly installed administration of Democratic Governor Andy Beshear. For the previous 4 years, anti-abortion Republican Governor Matt Bevin's administration refused to issue a license. The change doubled the number of abortion providers in Kentucky from 1 to 2. Dr. Kara Cadwalader, Planned Parenthood's chief medical officer for Kentucky and Indiana, said the resumption of abortion services in Louisville had gone smoothly. Anti-abortion protesters routinely appear outside the building, she said, but they were a steady presence even when the center did not provide abortions. She and her colleagues are bracing for a new wave of anti-abortion legislation from Kentucky's legislature, where the GOP holds enough seats to override possible vetoes from Beshear. We'll once again be under siege, Cadwallader said. In October 2019, Planned Parenthood's affiliate in St. Louis opened a large new health center in Fairview Heights, Illinois, about 17 miles from its St. Louis clinic. Illinois, where Democrats hold power, has not sought to curtail abortion, and the clinic was intended to provide an extra option for women from Missouri and other nearby Republican-governed states with multiple restrictions. Missouri, for example, bars the use of telemedicine for abortion services, a policy that has sharply limited the number of medication abortions. Dr. Colleen McNicholas, Planned Parenthood's Chief Medical Officer for Reproductive Health Services in the St. Louis region, has made it clear that medication abortion by telemedicine is available in Illinois. The Reverend Catherine Ragsdale, who represents many independent abortion providers as president of the National Abortion Federation, said one priority for her members is to make medication abortion more widely available. She also anticipates that it will become more difficult for women to obtain late-term abortions, increasing the need for funding programs that can help pay for travel to clinics that offer those procedures. Lori Bertram Roberts is executive director of one such program, the Alabama-based Yellowhammer Fund. She anticipates an increase in the number of low- and middle-income women who will need significant financial help, sometimes topping $10,000, to travel to distant clinics if access is curtailed in Alabama. Bertram Roberts also expects more women to resort to do-it-yourself abortions now that it's increasingly possible to receive abortion pill drugs by mail. We're talking about a huge amount of people who can possibly do stuff at home safely, she said. We're not going back to the days of back-alley abortions.
Tonsillectomies are a thing of the past. Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 72-year-old woman who is blessed with good health. In my adolescent years, I occasionally got strep throat, but a respected doctor of internal medicine, later head of a medical school, cautioned my mother against ever having my tonsils taken out. The general advice of the day was to have them removed, but he said that the tonsils are the first line of defense against more serious infections, that they serve to filter out bad microbes that invade the body, and a mild sore throat can be proof that the tonsils are doing their job. I wonder, when doctors or researchers are putting together their questionnaires to attempt to determine why one person has certain symptoms of a disease but not others, or why certain people are more vulnerable to an infectious disease when others aren't, is the question ever asked if the patients still have their tonsils? It strikes me as a simple question that could possibly lead to a deeper analysis of the body's defense mechanisms. SJW. Answer. Long-term follow-up of children who have had their tonsils removed shows approximately double the risk of developing respiratory infections in the subsequent 10 to 30 years. Removing the adenoids, typically done at the same time, increased the risk of developing chronic obstructive lung disease. As you note, far fewer of today's children have their tonsils out compared with the almost routine tonsillectomy of years ago. I agree with you that more research is called for. However, I will note that during an exam, lack of tonsils and adenoids is usually quite apparent, and enlarged tonsils certainly are. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536-475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, November 5th, 2020, etc. Woman wonders why son didn't reveal partner's miscarriage. Dear Abby, I thought my son and I were close. Recently, I learned that his girlfriend had a miscarriage. I learned about it from an email his girlfriend sent me, and I have also learned he told another relative he's close to about the miscarriage. I called his girlfriend after receiving her email and expressed my sympathy, inquired about her health, and told her that I would keep her and my son in my prayers. My feelings are hurt because I didn't hear about the pregnancy miscarriage from my son, and he disclosed it to another relative instead. I thought we could discuss anything, even though we disagree on some things. I want to ask why he didn't tell me and let him know my feelings are hurt, because children are family treasures. Should I express how I feel and ask why he felt he couldn't share with me? Overlooked in Florida. Dear Overlooked, resist the urge to personalize this the way you have. If you are smart, you will think long and hard, a few months perhaps, before asking your son that question, because if there is a problem in your relationship, this will only make it worse. Take this opportunity to work on the things that aren't right in your relationship with your son. He may have had other things besides his mother on his mind when this had happened, and may not have wanted or needed to be reminded that children are family treasures. Dear Abby, my husband and I have been together for almost 10 years. He's my dreamboat, everything I ever wanted in a man. Although he doesn't have a history of cheating, he is flirtatious. My husband fixes computers. Last year, when my best friend's computer wouldn't turn on, he was happy to help. I just found a naked picture of her on his computer. When I confronted him, he confessed he stole it while he was fixing her computer. When I told my friend, she kind of blew it off. Men do stupid stuff. I don't know if I can trust him again, and I feel beaten down. I have been hurt several times before in prior relationships. Abby, what do I do? Shocked in New Jersey. Dear Shocked, your best friend's reaction was unusual. Most women would be mortified over this scenario. Your husband's behavior was shameful. He should delete the photo he stole and apologize to you and your friend for the stupid stuff he did. And because this has damaged your ability to trust your husband, insist on some sessions with a marriage and family therapist to see if the damage to your relationship with him can be repaired. Dear Abby, my mother-in-law has a disgusting habit. Whenever I'm starting to cook something with raw hamburger, she grabs a mouthful. I have tried explaining how dangerous it is, but she won't listen to reason. She says she's been doing it since she was a kid. She's 80 now. I've tried pointing out that the meat supply is not the same as it was then, but her response is, "It hasn't hurt me yet." Please advise. Careful cook in Carolina. Dear cook, I'll try. Go to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration website, FDA.gov, and search on eating raw ground beef. When you do, you will find printable information about the dangers of E. coli, which is most prevalent in raw hamburger and especially dangerous to young children and people over the age of 65. Then give the printout to your mother-in-law and pray she's capable of changing her ways. Dear Abby, Abigail Van Buren, write, Dear Abby, at P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069, or visit www.dearabby.com.
Horoscopes for Thursday, November 5th. Happy birthday for Thursday, November 5th, 2020. Realistic, razor sharp, and charismatic, you tell the truth. This gets you into the best possible trouble this year, and you become even more successful. Don't be afraid of having a truth about you revealed. If single, you often begin and end a romance suddenly, but in 2021, you decide to stick it out. If attached, you have a transformative connection with your soulmate. Leo brings you to heaven. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21st through April 19th, 3 stars. Seek inner harmony and release stress. A family member is feeling very adventurous and might surprise you by taking a gamble. Take sensible precautions and all will be well. Genealogical study uncovers interesting facts. Tonight, it's a wonderful time to redecorate your workspace. Taurus, April 20th to May 20th, 3 stars. A sibling or neighbor is changing. Don't be in denial when obvious signs are being sent. Be diplomatic when discussing controversial issues. Call ahead and confirm plans. Transportation needs are being considered, and information exchange is very important. Tonight, return calls promptly. Gemini, May 21st to June 20th. 4 stars. Your thoughts mostly revolve around your earning power. You work hard for your family's security. Shop for an item you've long coveted in the days before the pandemic. Keep receipts. A purchase might have to be exchanged. Tonight, study your habits regarding money. Cancer, June 21st to July 22nd. 5 stars. Today marks one of the most promising times all year. Career and personal opportunities abound. Enjoy life and put plans in motion for your future dreams. Write your New Year's resolutions, schedule appointments, and begin projects you've been interested in. Tonight, celebrate quietly. Leo, July 23rd to August 22nd, 3 stars. Memories of a lost love must be kept in perspective. Your interest in helping the disadvantaged grows. Quietly, you will act and do much good in the world. Tonight, there are thoughts and feelings you'd prefer to keep to yourself for the time being. Virgo, August 23rd to September 22nd. 4 stars. You will enjoy chance meetings with those from your past. A reunion with a longtime friend is likely. You might reconsider the pursuit of a dream once abandoned. Get in touch with your inner voice for direction. Tonight, consult with a group. Libra, September 23rd to October 22nd, 5 stars. Today is all about professional aspirations and your ambitions. You will attract attention. Pursue opportunities that showcase your capabilities. You're entering a more promising security circle. You might have gone from rags to riches more than once. Tonight, a sigh of relief. Scorpio, October 23rd to November 21st, 5 stars. Expect an increase in energy and motivation. Take time to exercise. Travel is favored, as are journeys of the mind and spirit. There is much to learn. If you've always yearned to write, now is the time. Tonight, a sense of the miraculous prevails. Sagittarius, November 22nd to December 21st, 4 stars. Today puts you in tune with your potential. Fate is at work in your life. Some things just are and are not meant to be. Appreciate synchronicities, and you'll be guided to manifest what's best. Heed signs. Tonight, your energy level is especially high. Capricorn, December 22nd to January 19th, 3 stars. Today reveals much about a close partner. Companions offer suggestions. Reality is clouded. If in doubt, wait for the facts to be revealed before making choices. Revel in the attraction of opposites. Tonight, a much sought-after dinner with a loved one. Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th, 3 stars. Your sense of adventure deepens. You'll yearn to wander and explore. Dreams and visions must not be taken literally. Direct your heightened imagination and creativity into constructive ends. A domestic matter demands your attention and can be sorted out. Tonight, an especially healthy meal. Pisces, February 19th to March 20th, 4 stars. Today ushers in a cycle of happiness. Reach out to those you care about, even ones you haven't talked to in a long time. Visit an art display or complete creative projects. Get all the facts before acting. Tonight, patience is a must. Born today, singer Art Garfunkel, 1941. Playwright Sam Shepard, 1943. Actress Tilda Swinton, 1960.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.